On this episode of Still Loading, Sissy Jones returns. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I am your host, Josh Koval, and today on the show, it is a return guest. Sissy Jones is back on the podcast, and it's not just me interviewing her this time. This time, my friends Driana and Andrew from The Experience Point, you might remember them from, well, Andrew's been on numerous episodes, but Driana has been on the Kingdom Hearts 2 episode during the summer PS2. But they joined me to talk to Sissy about her work on The Owl House, which doesn't have a video game adaptation yet. Disney, get on it. But also her new game that just released, Call of the Sea. And Call of the Sea, at the time of this recording, it was not out and I did not play it. But since then, I have played it and I love it so much. If you have not played Call of the Sea, I highly suggest it. It is such a great game and the storytelling and the visuals are just fantastic. Give it a play. It is 100% worth your time. But we got to speak to Sissy about working on The Owl House as well as Call of the Sea, and we got deep. We talked a lot about inclusivity in games and media, and it was just such a casual conversation, and it was just so nice, and I really think you all will enjoy this episode, So without further ado, here is the joint interview with me, The Experience Point, and Sissy Jones. On this week's episode, it is a very special episode. I know I say that all the time, but this week is especially special because not only do I have a returning guest on the show, I have two returning collaborators who were with me for the summer of PS2. Andrew and Gianna from the Experience Point are here. Guys, say hi.
Hi.
And they are joining me to interview the incredibly kind and talented Sissy Jones. How are you doing tonight, Sissy?
And how are you guys?
Doing pretty well. So I am Josh. I'm the one who interviewed you last time. Now you can actually see my ugly face.
Wow.
Then Andrew and Gianna are my other friends here.
Friends? Nice to meet you.
Hi. You
nice
too.
Nice to meet you. Josh, I'm excited.
No, me too. Thank you guys for waiting so late. I'm pretty sure you're on the East Coast, but I really...
We are.
You're fine. That's why they decided to wear their pajamas. On the other hand...
Oh my god.
Got my bad girl Coven shirt.
One. I'm so jealous. That's amazing.
I'm just wearing a Totoro onesie.
Send us a P.O. box. We'll ship you one.
Yeah?
Our friend made it.
Oh my god. Okay. Yeah, I totally will. That's amazing.
If you want, I can Photoshop it to be Lilith instead.
I would not.
Although I don't think Lilith would take too kindly to being in Ida's bad girl Coven.
Season 2. I don't
Yeah, know. We'll see. Not to spoil anything right out the gate.
I know. I also want to work again, so.
Yeah.
So Andrew and Gianna host a YouTube channel called The Experience Point, and so that's why you can see his logo back there.
Very cool. I like it.
Thank you. I designed it.
I've been friends with them since, I've been friends with Andrew since college, and then I met Driana through Andrew because those two are a cute, adorable couple who are married.
Adorable married couples. That's really cool.
Thank you for spending a couple moments of your free time with us for tonight.
Thank you.
Oh, geez. Sorry. I am actually, this onesie is hot. I do have a shirt on underneath this, I promise. It's not weird or creepy. I'm just.
Whatever. I know my house is freezing. Like I live in LA, you know, it's like 70 degrees during the day, but at night it gets cold and my house has no insulation. And so like I'm walking around in like bunny slippers and my Call of Duty sweatshirt and I'm so cold. It's ridiculous.
Then you go outside and everything's on fire.
Literally, like we went outside today. We're all like bundled up and I was like, oh God, it's so hot. Take off all the clothes.
All right. I think we are all set unless guys, do you have any other questions for her? Or Sissy, is there anything else that we need to worry about that you want us to let us know beforehand?
I would definitely, I have a stream Monday morning for Call of the Sea that I'd like to plug. That's it.
This won't be out by then.
Well, shit.
But it will be out after Call of the Sea comes out. So I wanted to ask you without any spoilers, NDAs are a bitch. So we want to make sure that we don't ruin anything of that. So,
Yeah, I can finally say that who my male co-star is in that game. So that's nice.
Yuri Lowenthal, right?
Yuri Lowenthal. Spider-Man himself.
Spider-Man himself. Wow. Yeah. Great. He did such a good job with that game. Holy crap.
He does such a great job with everything.
I know.
Like he does a great job at human.
At existing. He's definitely one of those like chameleons in the industry too, where it's like, he might not be as well known as like a Steve Bloom, where it's like the first syllable, you're like, okay, yeah, okay, I understand. But he's like in everything.
You don't want to be that recognizable because then people start complaining that you're in everything.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Yeah, you want to be like, I'm in everything. You had no idea, but I am literally in everything.
Yes.
Or instead, like when they hear a character, they're like, ah, that's this person. It's like, no, we want to like reestablish that this is a new character.
Yeah.
Actually, have you ever had anyone say like, oh man, you should have tried out for this part, or you should audition for this, and you're like, I already
I did audition it, or that was actually me. Yeah, there's a game, Crash Bandicoot, and
yes, I saw.
I've heard of that series before.
Yeah,
really, it flew under the radar. Game. Nobody played it.
Well, but apparently there's like three girl characters, and three of us who were in the game, and for the longest time we couldn't figure out which one of us voiced the character because they don't tell us. And finally, I was like, well, someone please just send me a clip. And so someone put together like a smash clip of her. I was like, that's me. That's me. But it was this weird like go around for like 6 months of like, I don't know what they don't tell us what the names are when we're there. So anyway.
Well, I enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah. I could talk forever.
Real nice.
Well, that's why I always like to kind of before, I think I told you before, Sissy, when we recorded back in August, which once again, thank you so much for doing this. I love having repeat guests and getting to know people more, but like, I like to have this kind of banter to start off. Cause otherwise it just feels weird walking right into like a, like, all right, here we are. It's questions.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's no greeting at that point.
Here's just work.
Right.
Exactly. And I never want anyone on either my podcast, and I would assume your guys' show, to ever feel like an interview is work. It should just be people hanging out, talking about stuff they love.
Yeah. And that's part of why we wanted to name it the Experience Point, where it's literally just about getting people together and sharing their experience, whether it's about a movie or a game or a TV show. So I feel the same way about our countless guests that we've been able to talk to over the years. That is a bold-faced lie. You are actually our first guest. So,
oh, yay. That's fun.
We're very pleased to have you on. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. No, that's really special. Thank you.
Yeah. We are both fans of The Owl House. I guess we can just jump right into that.
Yeah, let's just jump into it because this sounds like jumping into a territory.
Yep, that's a segue. We were kind of blown away when we found out about this show.
Been so much fun.
Yeah I had actually finished it recently, and I was constantly, I said this to Driana today, I was like, I'm gonna say this to Sissy and it's gonna sound like, you know, blowing smoke up you, but like one of my favorite things is honestly like the voice performances, like you and Wendy and like literally the whole cast are probably the strongest point about that show, and I'm not just saying that, like there's so much character to the characters. And we watch a lot of like, you know, new cartoons, and like a lot of the performances tend to be like a bit forgettable, or if it's like a specific art style or something that doesn't quite grab you. But this show had it all, and talking about, like, I listened to your previous episode with Josh, and a big point that you made was there's a lot more shows out there for like young women and young LGBT, and it just kept piling on and on and on and on. So like how was that as like almost checking all the boxes as to like, this is what a progressive show should be?
Well, I mean, so the cool thing is I didn't actually know most of that when I booked the job. It was just like, you know, please be a Disney witch, please be a Disney witch, you know, like I auditioned for stuff all day every day, like my job is not doing the job well. By the time I get to the job, the check is going to cash. My job is doing auditions, and that is many hours and unpaid, right? And so it's just chucking things at the wall and seeing what sticks. And I remember that audition very particularly because I just loved her. Like I was like, oh, I feel this character. Like she's, you know, got this tough exterior shell, but she's just ooey gooey on the inside, but doesn't want anybody to know about it. And I really related with her. And then, you know, I had the call back and then I booked it and it was amazing. And then I went on a record and it was great. And I knew that they had Nikki as the lead and that they made a point that she was not white, which I thought was really, really cool. But I didn't know they were going to pull the LGBTQ angle until it came out. And I was like, God, what a coup.
Yeah.
Like, so amazing, you know, to be in this time when Disney is ready to take that jump. And it's just been awesome, you know, and it's funny, there's been a lot of speculation about like, is Lilith gay? And I'm like, nope, I have no idea. There's nothing. I know nothing.
Yeah.
Like, she's just love her for who she is and let it be that. Please don't put the pressure on the writers to make it that.
That's how it should be for everything.
But it's not like yeah. Steven Universe, I think, went through a huge fan pressure moment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so canon, I know nothing. Also,
yeah.
Just let her be. But it's been really, really cool to be a part of. And, you know, Dana, who created the show, is really fun. I don't know if you know that little like, the small little character that's white with big nose.
With the big nose.
Yeah, that's Dana.
That's her. Like,
yeah.
The world of the triangle.
The world of the triangle.
Yeah, that's Dana's little avatar. So yeah. She's just fun and quirky and brilliant. And, you know, watching her work, and God, she has poured her blood, sweat, and tears into this show. And I'm so happy for her, you know, to watch it be as well received as it has been. And
I can really feel it. The love is definitely there because, like, I mean, you know, throwing out my age right there, I'm 25 going on 26. I've been watching cartoons for a hot minute. And like, this is like the cream of the crop. And like, I feel seen, it's entertaining. Like, you could watch it as a one-off or you could binge it. And like, there's substance. It's not just the slapstick throwing out cheap jokes here and there. Like, it's got heart. So like, yeah. Thank you for being a part of that.
Thank them for hiring me.
Thank everyone for the show existing.
Well, you certainly breathe like a certain like bit of life into it. And it's really one of the things I noticed, maybe just because I knew I was going to talk to you, but I started really paying attention to Lilith and kind of how she speaks or how you speak. And I don't think it's ever been more apparent that two non-related people are siblings. Like, there is so much of your characters and Ida, like, in each other's performances. And I hear it. And if I'm like looking away while I'm hearing that real quick, I'm like, I don't know who said that. Was that Lilith or Ida? And it's like, I have a sibling, but she's younger and she's a girl. So it's not like we talk similarly. So I imagine it's kind of like when Josh and his brothers talk, it's like, there's a certain similarity there. So was that intentional or like, did you both go in, you and Wendy go in and kind of do that intentionally or?
We record in a vacuum always.
Really?
And you know, the funny thing for me is I grew up being a fan of Wendy's. You know, I used to watch shows that were way beyond my years, like Dream On HBO and, you know, all this other stuff. My parents didn't know that I was sneaking HBO at the time.
Well, it's on the internet now.
I know. But I remember being a fan of hers. And gosh, when they told me that she was playing my younger sister, I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
But no,
it's like, awful. Oh, well, thank you.
But again, like, that's what I love about voiceover, right? Is it doesn't matter how old you are. But yeah, no, it is funny. We have a very similar timbre, but I don't know that it was planned. Mm-hmm. I know that they were particularly interested in my ability to carry emotional heft, which is why they leaned on me for Lilith, which I was more than happy to do. I mean, God, what a gift.
I have a question. What is it like portraying like a messy older woman character? and like messy in the fact that like she's held up at such a high standard and very scholarly and academic, but then the moment Ida like gets under her skin, she reverts to like her childlike state.
They're suddenly just little kids again.
Yeah, do you have any like brothers or sisters that you could like, you know, like I know exactly what that's like.
I have an older brother, but we don't have that kind of relationship. I am a studier of people, you know, and I have friends who have younger siblings or watching sisters together, where, you know, something turned when they were children. And it was such a joy to do because, you know, we're kind of coming into this golden age of women being represented in media. You know, it's not just the damsel in distress. It's not just the video game vixen with the giant cans. They're actually three-dimensional, really interesting, messy human beings. And it's so much fun. God, it gives me so much life to be able to have those beats and not just be stuck in the canister of you're the mean older sister. You got to be the mean older sister the whole time, and you're bad and you're evil and there's nothing good about you. Everyone's going to hate you, you know? So to be able to break that mold, I mean, as a witch, right? And suddenly being a witch isn't a bad thing anymore.
Well, and it reminds me like that dynamics is, I haven't finished season one yet, but that dynamic you're talking about, I'm four episodes away.
Call me when you're like, what? I know. The last three.
But I was going to say, like, Amity kind of has that idea, that mentality where she is, or that whole concept where she seems as the bully. But the episode I just finished watching is where you find out why she ditched Willow, why she was forced to by her parents to. And it was heartbreaking. It's so heartbreaking to see. And you're right, like you see these three-dimensional characters that are no longer these just one-dimensional women. They actually have full-fledged personalities, and it's not just for window dressing. And I remember when we recorded last time, one of the things like that you're really passionate about, that you're really trying to get more of, is women doing movie trailers. And have you seen, now it's only been about 4 or 5 months since we recorded last, I guess about four, has there been more of that recently? I feel like I remember seeing you tweeting some stuff, but I it's been a bit.
So I did book a campaign for a very small movie, but you have to remember, you know, in the times of COVID, there really is no like coming to theaters.
True.
Coming to your house.
Coming to streaming.
To your laptop.
Yeah.
I did book a small indie trailer campaign, and they literally opened in theaters September 11th, and I was like, are you sure? Okay, these are the words on the paper. It is definitely a thing that I'm still working towards. I was really hoping that Wonder Woman 84 was going to have a woman on the trailer, and it looks like they're just going with no VO whatsoever, which sucks. Yeah. So I'll just keep banging on that ceiling. You know, it's time for it to come down.
They're just replacing all VO in movie trailers with just the Inception horn. Like the that's it, and then you don't have to pay somebody. It's just, can we just use that sound? Yeah, okay, we're going to put it like 13 times through the whole trailer.
Whoever did that initial horn is getting royalties out the ass for everything.
The funny thing is that I do a lot for trailers is celebrity sound alikes. So if like Charlize Theron is in the movie, they don't want to pay her to come in for a pickup because she's $1 million an hour. And so they call me to sound like her to replace dialogue for the trailer. So, you know, if they have to like replace an F-bomb or, you know, tell a story with a sentence that doesn't exist in the movie, they'll call in someone like me and it makes it in the trailer. I mean, it's not trailer money. It's not like, you know, the money that you get for saying July 7th rated R. Like that's, that's the big bucks somehow.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Who is your best celebrity impression then?
I did Charlize Theron for years.
Yeah.
I did all of her stuff for The Huntsman and Atomic Blonde, which was great. And I actually heard she had a Dior commercial on the television a while ago, and it came on and I was like, did I do Dior? Oh, no,
that's actually her.
Those bastards steal my audition.
Dior can afford it.
Yeah. I do a ton of those. I do Emma Thompson and Rebel Wilson and Penelope Cruz and
Rebel Wilson, really?
Yeah, you know, she's a little bit up here when she talks, and she's like a little bit crazy, right? When she goes,
I can see her. That's amazing. In your last episode, you talked a bit about accents for a while. I was curious, this may be a bit presumptuous of me, but I assume with all of the accent work that you do and how familiar you have to be with certain accents, and now that we've talked for a little bit, can you tell geographically where we are based off of our accents, if we have any?
If we have any.
You know, East Coast, but.
Yeah, I know the East Coast. I would say.
I don't have an accent though. At least I don't think so.
No, you don't have much of an accent. Hmm. I would say like North Carolina, Virginia, because it's not thick Southern, and it's not like Boston Haba, and it's not, you know.
Oh my God! Yeah, I'm actually from Boston. This whole time I've been suppressing the accent. No, a little northern.
You've kept this from me for years, Andrew.
Yeah, this whole time I've been a townie. a little more north. We're central to eastern Pennsylvania, actually.
Really?
She got that right. She said the middle. She's like,
if I had spent any more time in Philadelphia and I said, I'm going to go grab a little bit of water real quick.
Water.
Yes.
And get a hoagie.
Going down to the Wawa and get a hoagie.
Yeah. No, it's funny because it gets so specific regionally, you know, with different accents and, you know, the states, and then you look at the UK and South America and stuff.
Well, that changed. Like, doesn't the UK accents change like from street to street practically?
Yeah, it's insane. Really good, you know, resources out there for accent learners. It's fun.
I wanted to ask, you mentioned a little bit earlier when we were in regards to the Owl House, you were talking about how great the fan feedback has been. What type of feedback have you seen online?
You know, it's interesting. The difference in fan interaction from video game to animation is very different. And I wonder if it's because in a video game, you know, you can spend hundreds of hours in a person's ear. And so there becomes a familiarity that maybe is felt from the player that I don't know. But with animation, it's been much more like, instead of "you bitch, I can't believe you did that," it's, "oh my God, you did such a great job bringing that character to life." Right. So it's been a weird twist. You know, I've done some games where people were pretty unhappy with my characters and they come attacking me.
I remember about Delilah. You told us like that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I got death threats from Delilah and.
What?
Oh, yeah. What?
I didn't know the death threats part.
Yeah.
Well, that game
very
ends.
Strongly worded emails and, you know, all this stuff. But with Owl House, it is, "oh my God, you broke my heart. Your portrayal was incredible. You did a terrific job bringing this character to life." And it's a much different interaction, which has been really great. And, you know, and there's a woman in Sweden who does a fanfic blog. Her handle is Evil Snotbag.
nice.
She's done some incredible fanfic, and she reached out to me and asked if I would voice, you know, a couple of little things and then sing a lullaby that she wrote for Lilith. And I did, and it was gorgeous.
Adorable.
It was really, really cool, and she and I have become friendly because she was very.
I would love to find that, Josh. Link us to find it some kind of way.
Yeah, you can find her on Twitter and Instagram. I think Evil Snotbag. she writes. You know, she does these incredible drawings. Right now, she's doing a mashup of My Little Pony and Owl House. So she's got Edith and Lilith as My Little Ponies. Oh my God, it's amazing. She's incredible.
That's awesome.
So yeah, highly recommend.
I will send. I found her Twitter account. I can send you guys.
Wow,
her,
perfect. That was fast. Twitter, you're already just typing on the side.
You can't really misspell it.
Yeah. Evil Snot Rag.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that was going to be my Twitter handle, but I was already taken.
Well,
since you were saying that, like, video games and animation come from like different places, and that like people, I guess, on the animation side came from more of a place of gratitude, does that influence like if you like prefer to go for video game roles or like animation roles? Do you have a preference?
I like it all. I mean, I like to work, and I like my job a lot.
So fair.
Yeah, I really like it all. I mean.
Well, I remember you saying last time that unlike other voice actors that really focus in on one media type, I guess, you kind of do a little bit of everything. You've done voiceover for games, you've done voiceover for movies and TV shows, and also for commercials and for anime, which I didn't even bring it up last time. You did Kaguya from Naruto Shippuden, and like one of the main villain. I didn't get that far in the show.
That's
but
the top villain.
Season 537.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think it's 538 actually.
Well, shit. Yeah, actually, that's I'm getting my first Funko. My first Funko doll.
What? Oh, that's fantastic.
That was your first one, really? I'm surprised.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Delilah didn't have a body.
And you see Delilah's face.
They just. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if Funko put just out a Delilah mirror. Funko Pop, and it was just like an empty box.
Just a box.
Oh no, they would put the lake sign up there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That would be awesome.
Funko Pop. Did I tell you a fan made me a pork pond sign?
Yep. Oh yep.
That's awesome.
It's in my living room right now.
I was thinking about what you're talking about, how the different reactions you've gotten from fans based off a video game or shows. I just wonder if it's like fan expectations that cause that reaction. Like fans expect more of video games for some reason, I guess. Like, I wonder if that's a thing. Cause when it's a show, it's, I don't know, I guess it's easier. I don't know where I'm going with this actually, but I feel like the expectations are just different.
I think it might be.
If you just look at the experience of it, right? Like a show, you are a third party watching a thing happen. Mm-hmm. You know, you watch the interaction of the sisters and Luce and Amity. You watch that happen. As a game, more often than not, you are playing as character. So the things are happening to you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so there's
a
different psychological perception of it, I think, that just makes it more personal for people. And I totally get it. And especially when you get some of these games that have, you know, 600 hours, there's a familiarity with that people start to feel with the voice actors when we're just in a room by ourselves for, you know, 4 hours at a time saying words. So it's, you know, it's different.
I wonder if it's kind of like along the same lines. I remember hearing like one of the, I don't know how to really segue into this part, but it's basically like once television came out, people became much more connected to television characters than movie actors, because television is literally in your home. It's literally you are bringing part of that person, even if they're just portraying a character, that you're bringing part of that person and that character into your home. And as we've gotten farther in media with between podcasts like the one people are listening to now, or YouTube, or
smash that subscribe button, y'all.
Yeah, right.
I always wanted to say that.
Make sure to hit the bell for some notifications.
ding, ding. Anyone else get that? Okay. Rocky III reference, anybody? Come on.
Oh, okay. Great.
Come on. Apollo Creed here.
Yo, Adrian.
But like with YouTube, with podcasts, and with video games, you're spending a lot more intimate time with that person, or like that person spending a lot more intimate time with the media they're interacting with. So there's something to be said. That's why people obsess over YouTubers and obsess over podcasts. Not mine, because I'm not that big, but like for with over podcasts and YouTubers and video game voiceover artists and just things in general. I mean, for crying out loud, freaking CD Projekt Red has been getting death threats for all their delays on Cyberpunk, and people haven't even experienced that game yet. They have such an emotional connection to the developer because of the amount of hours they've spent with them. So it's kind of like we're just getting further and further because the media is becoming so much more personal to everyone, which is a good thing, but also a bad thing, i.e. you've received death threats for Delilah.
But also accessible.
That sounds like a band name.
Death threats for Delilah. I like that.
But the other thing too is that there's an accessibility that wasn't there mm-hmm. 10 years ago, you know. And so I have a friend who's a games journalist, and she's like, yeah, pretty much the mark of a good story these days is how many death and or rape threats you get. Mm. And I'm like, that's bullshit. That's
is this so Alana sad. Pierce by any chance?
Yeah.
She
because
gets...
then you know you're you know, you're setting things off. You're touching on a subject that people want to engage with in whatever twisted way that they engage. And it's, you know, I hate it. I hate that part of the business. I really do. By and large, people with me have been super, super great. And I feel really lucky and happy. And, you know, I'm just a nerd from Idaho that gets to live my dream. So luckily people have been pretty cool with me, except for that one guy. He can fuck off.
Yeah, you hear that one guy?
We don't know you, but you're dead to us.
Right.
Yeah, with my experience as like a consumer of video games and media and also being a nerd, like I've felt that as well. Cause like, for example, like The Walking Dead, the game, like we haven't even touched on that. Like you're in it, you're Katja. That's one of my favorite games of all time. I've never cried so hard at a video game in my life because these characters felt like my family. And not trying to throw out any spoilers for those who probably want to play.
It's time, guys.
Some it's only people been 10 die. Years.
Yeah.
Many kids. It's been 10 years. Can I say it now?
It's been 10 years.
Katja dies, Lee dies. And like, I spent so much time like protecting them and like me, the character, me, Lee. And then like to see them go. Andrew was there when the main character died, Lee.
Look at that like, facial expression. As if
you lost your own family member. Yeah. So like, I can see how, even though it's inappropriate, you should not be getting death threats. So people do take it way more like personally. It's like happening to them. Cause I felt that too. Like I just lost my family, Katja. I just protected her family and we've made it so far. And now just to like watch them go or like, choosing to have to shoot people, like, just, like, mind-boggling.
As somebody who was in the room during that entire game, she cried more at that game, at losing some of those characters, than she has lost losing actual family members. So, like, I mean, that speaks to, like, how close the specific family members were, but like you're saying, it's such an intimate
connection. Is that a subtle burn there?
What?
I mean, you know which family
because like it was a much more tragic like zombies and like being violently taken away from you than like very real world natural things happening. So that's what he means. Yeah. That was not a burn.
You said you cried really hard. I think it went full on screaming. I don't know if it was you couldn't even call it crying at that point. I was like, okay.
Burning me.
But that's just like it's just a testament to like how well like you guys all did those performances and how like the rest of the team with the animations and the music and just it all coming together into like this great bittersweet just soul crushing moment that for some reason we'd like to have happen. We're like, yes, hurt me more.
Yeah, I know. Well, so it's funny because I played 9 characters throughout that series, and the going joke was that I was always the red shirt. You know, I was always gonna die. Like every one of my characters died.
Sean Bean of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
But you know, recording it. So Katja was my first job.
That's wild too.
Yeah, it was my second audition ever, and my first job. And recording it, I knew it felt special. Like I didn't understand at the time how special it was because it was my first job. But I remember meeting the other cast members. They used to get together for beers in Oakland when I lived up in Northern California. And I walked in, a friend of mine invited me to go, and I was brand new to the business. I didn't know anybody. And I walked in and I was like, hey guys, I'm Katja. And they were like, Katja. And they're still some of my best friends. Melissa Hudson, who played Clementine, is one of my closest friends. Owen Thomas, who played Omid, is, we were just texting earlier today. Gavin Hammond, who played my hothead husband, Kenny.
Oh, I love Kenny.
We're Kenny. Friends. Like it was lightning in a bottle. And I would hesitate to say, I don't think I've had that experience with any other single recording job ever. Because, you know, the way it is, you know, you could share 100 credits with somebody and be like, oh, you were in that thing. Cool. Me too. Red. You know, but that one was like, oh, my God, you were in The Walking Dead. How did they kill you?
I was going to say, it's almost like misery loves company, or like you have that shared trauma. So you're like, yes. Oh, man, when they cut my head off, it was wild.
I mean, listen, that last session for Katja, I was sobbing. Like there was no, that was not put on, that was full-fledged just
I can't even imagine.
What's been one of the hardest roles that you've had to perform, like that was unexpectedly difficult for you to pull off?
That's a really good question. And it's funny because I cry really easily. And there are times when I'm like, I'm going to need a minute. If you want me to get through this, I'm going to.
No, let it out. Like, we're recording.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Katya was particularly heavy because I, when I was younger, I lost a cousin who was about Duck's age. And that was a real kick in the stomach. But yeah, that was, I mean, getting the words out for Katya was just hard. It's just hard.
The reason I even asked that, because I remember I did an episode a couple of weeks back on The Last of Us, and in the behind the scenes episode, in the behind the scenes of The Last of Us, Naughty Dog did this amazing like hour and a half long documentary interviewing all the different people. But Troy Baker talks about the one when he had to do the scene where his daughter dies. I'm blanking on his daughter's name, but at the beginning of the game, and his daughter dies, and he just talks about Sarah, and he talks about how emotionally draining having to do that scene, and they made him do it like 40 or 50 times or something like that, just over and over and over again, because it just wasn't what Neil Druckmann was looking for. So I was just thinking, I thought about that, I'm like, well, what could have been like your equivalent of that scene? And Katya seems to be it, just like having to this and having to go to those dark places to get those emotions out. Like even someone for me who now, like, I'm not an actor, but whenever I experience a moment like that, whether it be in a movie, a game or whatnot, it now becomes instantly more relatable. Like, I'm going to be a father in a couple months, so now anything involving kids, I'm like freaking the hell out, because I'm like, oh God, I'm having a baby soon. This better not happen to my baby.
Yeah. I got to tell you, like, the plot decoy of dead kid is not fun for me anymore. You know, I think if I had to do Katya today, it would be a lot more challenging, because I have had kids since then. But even in Firewatch, you know, I was like, all right, guys, you got to be done with the dead kids. Like, you got to find a different way to tug at people's heartstrings.
Yeah.
But, you know, even truly, there are a couple of lines of Lilith's in the last few episodes that were tough to get out, because they're really emotionally charged. And I'm not going to spoil it for you, Josh.
If you guys want to talk about it, I won't be upset if you spoil it. Like, I like it a lot, but I'm not going to be upset if you spoil it. So if you feel compelled to talk about it, don't hold back on my account. I'll be fine. It's my fault for not preparing enough.
But it is very emotionally charged, and you can definitely tell. I think I did cry a little bit, and then I drew some really angsty art afterwards.
She did. Ooh,
I want to see it. You got to send it to me.
Oh my God.
Do you have your tablet?
Absolutely.
I will. I'll send you guys. Is it okay if I send them the email that I've been contacting you on?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
I will send it to you guys then after we're done recording.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's like the sibling, not quite rivalry, but like the sibling-ness going on toward the last three, Josh. It's just chef's kiss.
Man, everyone's just rubbing that in my face now.
Yep. Really good. There was there was a little game called Eliza that came out. It was more of a graphic novel, but it was like you the player, are a proxy for a therapist, essentially. And these various characters come in and they, you know, kind of divulge their lives. And that one was really, really hard because it was really personal. I played this character, Nora, who, you know, wants to be an artist, and she's struggling because everybody's better than she is. And she can't seem to catch a break. And, it very much spoke to my imposter syndrome from, you know, getting into this business with no background in acting and all of that. And it was just like, here's my heart. And it was real heavy. I was also really sick when I recorded it, and I was like, I don't know if I'm crying or if it's just snot.
Wasn't that your character's name to my performance? Call of the Sea as well?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yes. Another Nora. Yes.
Well, one of the things we mentioned it when we talked last time back in August, but one of the things I really love about your body of work is that you really try to focus on unconventional ideas or unconventional characters. So like you were saying, I didn't even know about Eliza. So that's interesting. Like, it's a video game from the vantage point of a therapist, which who would have thought of that being a game, even if it's just a visual novel or something like that. That's still, you don't see that in movies usually, like a very serious take on that from that perspective. So that's interesting. But with with Call of the Sea coming out, I remember you're talking about how the main character is a grown woman and you don't really see that. And then the other game, what is it? My gosh, you aren't the main character in, but it's the game where you're playing as an old man.
Yes, Forever Ago.
Ago. Forever That's not ago. Out yet. But
I'm not the old man. I just wanted to make that clear.
I mean, I thought you wanted to challenge yourself.
That's some great acting.
Finishing everybody.
And that's why she has a BAFTA.
I lost my things and teeth.
My dentures have gone missing.
It's really fun. I'm super excited for Call of the Sea. Again, like you said, she's a, 40 something year old woman, and she's in a long-term marriage, and her husband goes missing, and she goes off to save him, and in the process kind of discovers herself, and it's awesome. And I get to play opposite Yuri freaking Lowenthal, which is amazing. But they approached me because of Firewatch, and they wanted to make a game that explored these different themes that you don't see in mainstream games. And then Forever Ago, like you're saying, it's a game from a German company where you, the player, play as an old man who's kind of on a redemption journey, and I'm just a bartender along the way. But it's really cool. It's great as games become easier to make with smaller teams. You just get this breadth of experience that you don't normally see, which I really love. Animation's a different story. Animation takes a long time.
The entire month of December here on Still Loading has been sponsored by Geek Guilt. Geek Guilt is the online store for all of your geeky needs. From clothing to costumes to home living and to the video games themselves, Geek Guilt is worth checking out. When you go to their website, make sure you sign up for their newsletter, because that is where you'll get updates to new items they have in stock, sales they have going on, and sometimes maybe even a giveaway or two that they might sneak in there. So make sure you go to geekguilt.com, sign up for their newsletter, and check out all the amazing stuff they have to offer.
I was going to say, like, what do you think the biggest difference is having to work for like something like Firewatch, where it's made by like, what, eight people. And then going to literally Disney, where they own everything.
Yeah.
All of us.
Just on Owl House.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's really cool. Disney's the dream. You get into voiceover. Pretty much every single person I know gets into voiceover to do animation. And Disney's it's the mouse house, man. They're the ones that come. Yeah. So it's really cool. I don't know what else to say. Like, I don't have really any say in the character, like I did with Firewatch, just because it was a smaller, scrappier team. Mm. But that's okay.
Were you able to improv at all with Lilith, or?
A little bit. Things here and there. I have a funny way of talking sometimes. I just throw in weird pauses in places, and they would let me keep that. But the other thing too is that I booked it in 2017. So, and then we started recording, I think, in 2018. So I had to sit on it for 2 years.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, I just wanted to come out.
And the little like Mickey Mouse shaped like red sniper dots start to move around. You're like, never mind, I won't talk about that.
And it's funny, like I started to get paranoid about like, who can I follow on Twitter? Because some people are sleuths, and they'll figure out, oh, you started following. I bet she's working on the thing. She's in the thing.
That's why you got to follow everyone, and then they won't know.
Follow the Experience Point and the Still Loading podcast on Twitter. And then everyone...
Red button. Yeah. it's just another day in the life. Like, I love this job, that every day is totally different. The people I'm working with are totally different, and the teams are different. And I'm building a project right now with a friend of mine that I cannot wait to bring into the wild. But it's going to be a while. But again, it's all non-traditional characters and leads and, cultures that we don't see mainstream all the time. And I can't wait for it. It's time.
Yeah, it really is. So there's been a huge boom of uplifting voices that aren't often heard enough, whether it be people of color or LGBT, or like, we're just being flooded with stuff like the Owl House and She-Ra. I know Drianna has been loving She-Ra, and like,
You actually recommended She-Ra to me last time we talked. I watched a few episodes. I haven't been able to watch all of it, but yeah, you recommended that last time we spoke too.
It's so good. It's so well done. And it's exactly, it's everything you're saying. It's inclusive and, you know, it's not cruel for cruelness sake. Totally on a different. Yeah. I don't know if you guys have seen Ted Lasso, but
I want to so bad because it's from the creator of Scrubs.
Yes.
And oh, I adore that's your show.
Scrubs. So, that's my like top show of all time. I love Scrubs.
I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's kind and it's kind hearted. And there are women in the show that they set up to be adversaries, but they actually end up helping each other and caring about one another. And you don't see that, you know, it's always like hot woman versus hot woman and they hate each other because of guy.
Yeah.
You know,
and they wrestle in the mud. Oh,
Christ. And then they make out.
Yeah.
In the mud.
Ugh. I know. But it's so nice to see that different stories are being told, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kipo is another show that we've been watching. You know about Kipo and the Wonder Beast?
I haven't watched it, but I've heard great things about it.
Yeah, we watched the first couple of episodes of that one. And the biggest things that draw me in often are, and this had both of those, setting, crazy post-apocalyptic setting, and crazy visual style. And the soundtrack, there's a third thing. It's got a super funky soundtrack. It's almost like a Gorillaz music video. Yeah, so that's been really good. And actually, one of our friends pointed out that like the main cast is all non-white people, and you don't even notice it because you said like it's not cruel for cruelness's sake. Yeah. Just like these types of shows aren't inclusive for inclusivity's sake. It's not like they're going through and saying like, yes, we have the LGBT character, and then there's the non-white character. It's like when it's done so well that you don't even notice it.
Yeah.
Like that's true, like inclusion, instead of like, look how good we are. We've making everyone so happy by our stuff, you know?
And that kind of virtue signaling that you're talking about, when they do that inclusivity for the sake of it, not just for doing it out of the goodness of their heart, is why generally the people who are angry about it have that misguided rage where they lash out in ways that they really don't need to. It was the same thing. You did additional voices on Last of Us Part Two. You just have some, I don't know which voices specifically, have not beaten that yet. I'm hopefully getting it for Christmas, but Last of Us Part 2 had such a crazy backlash and outrage. And the thing that actually bothered me about that, besides obviously the misguided rage that was unnecessary, was one of the things that people were mad about, that Ellie is gay. And it's like, well, if you played the original game, it's in the original game. It's not like they just did this and dropped it in to be like, look how woke we are or some shit. They literally include that in the original game. So if you played the original game, you wouldn't have any reason to be upset for your so-called quote unquote virtue signaling. It's just, I can understand the rage because I used to have that mentality. Like that was a flaw that I had. So I can empathize with the thought process, even though I disagree, and I will try to correct as much as I can going forward. But it's like it's just something that it's good now that you see more of it, where it just, when it's not, when it's an afterthought, like when the inclusivity is it's like put on the forefront to a degree, but it's also it's an afterthought to the viewer. Like they don't notice it until like, oh shit, that's, you know, this is someone who is Hispanic, or this is someone who is a person of another person of color, or anything like that, or LGBTQ or anything like that. It's great
like
to
see.
Like
we're trying to normalize it. So the fact that it shouldn't be that much of a shocker, it shouldn't be like, she's gay. It's like,
she's a human.
Yeah,
exactly.
And Josh, I have to commend you for you know, saying that you came from that place and you got out of it. Like that's a really hard thing to say and to talk about. So kudos.
And that's not it.
No,
I'm an open book type of person to begin with, and Andrew and Driana can attest. Like we've had hour long conversations, and without trying to get into anything too serious, but like after all the protests that went down for Black Lives Matter this summer, like we've had a lot of conversations because I needed to learn more about stuff like that. So it's, and not just me, just like everyone in general, of course, but it's, I've always been that kind of person where it's, I just talk way too much about myself. So, but no, I don't know. That's it's
whatever. Amazing.
I don't know how to go from there.
Personal growth.
I also came from that place too. Like Josh was saying, we grew up going to college together, and I went through a similar process where it's amazing how your life can change when you start interacting and really having meaningful relationships with people that don't look like you and don't sound like you. And like, hell, look, I'm married to a Black woman. Like that will make you like so conscious of your privilege. And it's so, yeah, the fact that like we're seeing like all these shows and stuff that you're involved with in these games are almost like gateways for a lot of people to start unlearning their like their prejudices and just their, you know, I came from like a little white straight white man bubble, and as soon as I went to art school, it was like, wait, there's other stuff. So it's,
I mean, listen, I grew up in Boise, Idaho, and you want to talk about straight white Republican, like that was my childhood through and through until I went to college. And then you know, I have grown a lot, and there's a lot of things I look back on and go, oh, that was stupid. But you know, if we don't grow, what's the point? Truly, yeah. What's the point?
Mm-hmm.
To that end, what I have been so happy to see is people really, really working in the entertainment industry. And listen, the entertainment industry has a long way to go. I'm not going to say it's perfect, but like Chris Nee, who created Doc McStuffins, has just signed a new deal with Netflix, and she's running a bunch of shows, but hiring, like she has a Native American show that has an all Native staff.
Oh, that's awesome.
Native staff. Nice. She's got, she's also doing Ada Twist Scientist, which is based on a book about a little Black girl who's interested in science. And it's an all Black writer's room, which is fucking amazing. And then there's
it's
another.
Sad that you have to be like, this all Black story is an all Black staff. Like, it's sad that you have to be like, but finally in 2020, they're doing it.
Well, she
the fact that reputation. You saying that made my heart jump like, I don't believe it.
Yeah.
Like, that's sad, but like also like,
But it's time. Like, it's time. There's a movie on Netflix called Over the Moon, that's based in Chinese, written by all Asian staff and voiced by all Asian cast. Amazing. Like that was always kind of a line in the sand for me, personally. Was, you know, I really don't audition outside of my race. It just doesn't feel right. That said, I do, you know, Soundalikes for trailers for people when they're not available to come in, because it's not a caricature. I don't do a caricature. I will do a soundalike for something that specific. But then, you know, it just never really, I've been called in for sessions without an audition, and they're like, hey, you're Asian. And I'm like, I'm not.
Have you seen me?
Yeah. I would never do an accent or anything. It just felt gross. But yeah, it's changing. It's changing, and people are waking up, and people are growing, which I think is so important. You know, as a culture, if we don't grow, we're doomed to repeat the past, you know? So I'm happy to see a lot of these changes coming.
Yeah. I guess sticking with the, you being cast, are you, because you've worked so much at this point, are you finding yourself typecasted at all, or are you able to stay outside that? Are you always like, oh, it's another somebody with dead kids, or it's another, you know?
that's what she's typecast as, the someone with dead kids.
The woman with dead kids.
What a worst type. That's the worst type thing to be cast as.
I mean, in dead games, I get emotional heavy lifting, which is great. I'm happy to do that. I don't know if you played Fury or Darksiders 3.
Yeah, you're Fury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the moment when she loses the thing, I don't know.
Just say spoiler alert if it's going to be a spoiler.
Spoiler alert. The moment when her horse dies, and they were like, it's got to hit. It's got to be heavy. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. Oh God. Like afterwards, I was like, I'm going to need a minute.
Yeah.
I get a lot of that, but I love that. Like to be able to give people the experience of feeling real emotions in a digital world, I think is great, because we're so numb to so much.
Yeah.
So I enjoy that a lot, But, you know, I'm also working on a show called F is for Family, which is very much not heartfelt.
That's the Bill Burr show, right? Yes. I love Bill Burr. He's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like fart jokes and, you know, like it's crazy. But it's fun, you know. So it's all over the board.
Is there any roles that you want to see yourself cast in more often, or is there any all of them? Well, yes. In a perfect world, if you didn't have to work for money and you were like, is there a specific type of character that you want to play that you aren't? Or,
well, aside from Trailer,
yeah,
I'd love to do like Jane Bond. I'd love to do,
oh man,
I mean, I'd love to do Wonder Woman, let's be honest, but she's been done by so many incredible people, and if I get it, I get it. If I don't, I don't. But no, man, I really like the fact that there's more three-dimensional women. I'm also really excited to help my friends bring things to life. You know, I've always kind of found that my superpower is connecting people. Mm. And so, you know, I'm helping my friend create the show right now, and I won't have a role in it, which I'm okay with because it doesn't have a place for me, but it needs to be told. And I love that. I love being able to make the connections. And when people hear his idea and they're like, oh my God, I get warm fuzzies, and that I'm here for. I'm here for all day. I love it when my friends succeed.
Yeah. You know,
there's enough to go around.
I remember when we first recorded, that's kind of like how the whole voiceover industry is, from what you said. It's this incredibly supportive group of people, considering they're all competing against, not all, but you compete against each other, but at the same time you're all rooting for each other. And it's kind of like, I've talked to some of my podcasting friends about this, and it's interesting when you promote other people's podcasts or YouTube channels on your own, because you're driving people away, but it's like it's this supportive community where it's just like you just want the other person to do better, because that just means your friends are doing cool shit. And what doesn't feel great about seeing your friends do cool shit?
Rising tides, right? When I, yes. So my dad is a small business owner. And when I was a kid, he's a jeweler. So in Boise, Idaho, when I was a kid, every Christmas Eve, we would make hot buttered rum batter, and then we would deliver it to his competitors. And so, you know, every Christmas Eve we'd walk in and they'd be like, hey, how's it going? You know, it was just this annual tradition that we had. And I just always loved that, you know, that it was a camaraderie, and it wasn't cutthroat. I don't do well in cutthroat. That's not me. Cutthroat makes me really just itchy. I don't like it.
Well, so, it tweaks your anxiety then, because then you don't really know who to trust. And it's like, I don't know. I've had this weird thing where I feel like I've had a sixth sense of like friends, where it's like I only get close to people that somehow end up being really close friends, and people that I don't get close to don't, like, you know, I don't end up talking to that often. And it's not anything out of like I've like interact with someone and be like, oh, this person's a piece of shit, I don't like them. It's never been like that direct. It's more just kind of like in the back of my head, I feel like there's this subconscious vibe where I'm just like, I want to talk to this person more, or I don't want to talk to this person more. And because of that, I'm very thankful, knock on wood, I haven't really been dicked over by any friends because of that. So it works yet. Out. So I feel like it's yet, Andrew, I'm watching you.
Well, and I say this with love, once your baby is born, that circle is about to get a lot smaller.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a good thing people like us value quality over quantity when it comes with our friends, because we're the same way. You're one of a few, a small, probably under 10 people that I would consider actually like really close friends. And I'd rather have that than, you know, 100 people who are just like, oh yeah, I know so-and-so. It's just like acquaintances, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what gets you through the rough times.
Yeah. But I did want to, when I asked you about roles that you would like to play, I wanted to ask so now that you are under the Disney umbrella and they own everything, including The Simpsons, are you one step closer to your dream role?
I would love to think so.
She can't tell us if she is, though.
That's true. Well,
I mean, nothing has happened yet. But I mean, I wouldn't turn it down.
Yeah. I remember you saying like, that's pretty much why you wanted to get into voice acting. Like that was like your, yeah.
I heard Nancy Cartwright on the radio.
Yeah.
Talking about voiceover, and I was like, what?
And then didn't you just immediately enroll in like acting classes?
I did, and I emailed her afterwards. I emailed her fan page, and I was like, "You don't know me, but you changed my life. Thank you." And
she wrote back. Did she respond?
Yeah, she was great. She was like, "That's awesome. Congratulations. Good luck."
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was great. She was.
I really hope you get to work with her someday.
Me too.
That'd be amazing.
Me too.
On The Simpsons, hopefully.
I mean.
Just anything. One of those things where it's like when you get to work with someone that you've idolized, or not even idolized, but like you look up to and admire, like it's just such a cool feeling.
Oh God, that was like when I met Jen Hale. I was like, yeah.
I'm amazed she still talks to you after that introduction.
She's like, "Are you okay? Do you need an ambulance?"
Yeah.
To kind of like a not so great transition, but to kind of pivot a little bit, we were talking about Call of the Sea, and by the time people hear this, Call of the Sea will be out. It will be out, December 6th, right? So
it'll 2 days be out before Cyberpunk, apparently.
How many days? Sorry,
2 days.
Well, by the time this is out, it'll probably have been pushed back again.
That's okay.
That's true.
I love CD Projekt Red, though. That's all a loving joke. Please don't.
I know.
Are you kidding me? I don't have that large of an audience that people are going to roast you.
You say that now.
I know, right? But with Call of the Sea, you said that Firewatch is one of the way is how you kind of got your foot in the door for that project. So did you actually, did it get you an audition, or did they just offer you the role flat out?
They offered it to me, which
okay.
is really nice and really rare. And, you know, they called to tell me the premise of the game. And I was like, yeah, okay, but say no more. I'm in, which was really great. They were willing to work with the union, which is also really great.
We talked a lot about that in the last episode.
And it was really good. It's funny because Firewatch is either people contact me because they want me to work in their thing because of Firewatch, a la Call of the Sea and Forever Ago, or they hear my audition and then they realize that I was Delilah and they know that I can pull emotional weight. And so it's, you know, it's been really, really good for that. Thank you, Sean.
when we last spoke, you mentioned that you mentioned Forever Ago and Call of the Sea, and you also mentioned a third project that you couldn't talk about yet. Is that still on the no-no list?
Yep.
Damn it. I was hoping 4 months later we could hear a little bit of something.
You'd think.
Well, I won't pressure you to so you won't give into temptation.
You almost heard it first here, folks.
I know, right?
Almost. I know. I'm trying to think of like, what else can I tell you about?
Well, what can you say about Call of the Sea that, I guess it will be out, but to get, it's obviously not a huge AAA title, so it's probably not going to be on a lot of people's radars. So can you tell us what's special about it or why somebody should pick it up, besides the fact that you're in it?
Well, I mean, listen, that's the main draw.
I mean, that's my number one.
No, it's a one woman's rise to sanity instead of a descent into madness.
Ooh, okay.
And, I like that.
It's very much
that down.
Yeah.
It's very much in an HP Lovecraft world. It's not a horror. Not a whore. I hate that word. I can never say it without horror. But it's a really fun puzzle game, kind of a la Myst, if you remember.
Okay. Myst. Yeah. I actually have a box copy of Myst right over there.
There you go.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, it's a really cool puzzle adventure game. And I'm gonna leave it at that. And it's got Yuri Lowenthal in it.
Lovecrafty and Myst. That's enough for me.
I watched the trailer just before you hopped on, and I love the visual style of it. Like I actually it's very stylized, but in a very good way. Like there's some, specifically the one scene that sticks in my head is like you're walking across, I don't know if it was on a ship, but like this metal walkway, and it's raining, and it's this beautiful lightning effect, and it's just everything shimmering, and it's just stunning to look at. Yeah. And I look now for games that you don't have to have the best graphical fidelity, but if their art direction is good, then I'm all over it. It's one of the reasons I love it's one of the reasons I think certain games hold up better than others visually. Like if you go back to the PS2, Medal of Honor does not look good now. It is, it's not, no offense to, they, you know, people put a lot of freaking hard work into it, but when you're looking at the visuals now, they don't always hold up too well. Versus Sly Cooper still looks really good.
Yeah,
Psychonauts, yeah. Like Monument Valley, I think, is just forever one of the most games I've ever
played. That's my therapy game. That and Animal Crossing.
So didn't I send you Monument Valley, Andrew?
I think you told me about it. Yeah.
That's such a, like, it just visually looks so stunning. Same thing with like Journey and have you, any of you played The Unfinished Swan?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a trip. That's a real trip.
So you, if you haven't played it, Sissy, it's like a, I mean, if you have, I apologize, but it's like a, you play, it's like a storybook. So the first screen is just completely white, no shadows. You can't see anything. And you hit the trigger on your controller and it shoots a glob of paint. So when it hits, it just splatters all over the place. Huh. And as, so you have to literally kind of paint this world into existence by shooting this paintball thing, because everything's there. Like all the geography is already there. You just can't see it because it's just pure white. Yeah. And as you go through the game, you get different colors of paint, which do different things. So black pretty much is only there just to give the world form, to kind of shape the whole world. But you end up getting red and blue and green, and they do other things. And it, the, what was cool was that the, there's a narrator the whole time, and the person who did the voice for the narrator, I believe, was one of the developer's mothers.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful game. It was done by Giant Sparrow, I want to think. I think they end up doing what the What Remains of Edith Finch.
Yeah. That was the one that got away.
Did you audition for that?
Yeah, I did, but it was right when the strike happened, and I believe they went non-union.
Of course.
But now,
now I just want to make sure I have that right.
If you haven't played Grease, also GRIS.
Oh my god!
Oh, Grease, yes, stunning,
amazing.
The watercolor aesthetic of that just blew me. I actually bought a physical copy from Limited Run Games. Literally, sight unseen. I didn't had any idea what the gameplay was like. I just saw the art style. I'm like, I need this in my life.
That's so amazing.
Yeah. So good.
Is there anything else you guys wanted to ask Sissy before we kind of wrap things up? Because we've been going for a little over an hour now.
Yeah, you've been so quiet.
I know.
I'm just so enjoying all of this. I am very engaged. It's also almost one in the morning.
Oh my god, so. I'm so sorry.
No, you don't have to apologize.
If you had questions or anything, I wanted to make sure we weren't yapping over you the whole time.
You guys pretty much, I'm like, oh, you guys are good. I'm just going to take a nice back seat and just like enjoy all of this conversation.
It's so hard.
Don't worry, I've written down some stuff that we've talked about. I'm like, okay, I need to check this out. Okay. Write down this Tumblr tag. Okay.
Evil snot. Yeah, definitely. Back. Right.
Yeah, it's hard when we're married. It's we're kind of a hive mind. So, and the fact that we talked about what we wanted to ask before we came on, it was like, so I tried to like shut up, and I was like, maybe Driana will say something, but she told us beforehand. She's like, I'm just kind of gonna sit and like soak in this person's majesty.
And we weren't even quite sure. This is the first time, at least for me, in any of, whether I've been on their channel or like for my show, we've ever tried to do like a three person interview for just one individual. So we weren't quite sure how really to balance it. So literally all of this was done on the fly. We had no idea what we were doing.
I mean, it feels like a conversation amongst friends, right? Which is,
that's exactly what you want.
That's exactly
that's your whole channel.
Yeah, like for our channel, the experience point, like that's what's called the experience point. So like, this is really great because like, example, the Owl House, like me, Andrew, and Josh have seen the Owl House, but you have been a part of it. So we're sharing our experiences from different viewpoints. And so that brings us all together. So it is conversation based.
Tell me your experience watching the Owl House. Like, I know you enjoy the show, but why? Tell me what rings with you.
All right, well, I've watched cartoons all my life and they are amazing and fantastic. And there is something to be said when it's not just the slapstick. Like, I enjoy that. Everyone enjoys a good laugh, but like, I love being drawn in by like these characters that are uplifting or like being seen, for example. So like, to go into a show where there's a person of color as the main character, and like, it's not like they are a person of color, like Luce just is.
She just is.
And then, like, yeah. Luce just is. And it's amazing because, like, I would love, like, to walk around in my daily life and just be and not have, you know, my skin be the forefront of my mind at all times. And that's what I feel with Owl House. Like, a lot of these characters just are. So, like, the LGBTQ side, like, you know, to someone who is queer, like, that's like, oh my gosh, I feel seen. But to Andrew, he was like, yeah, that felt very natural, that I was expecting a kiss at the end of the series. Like, that was very, like, just smooth. And, like, the sibling rivalry, it feels very natural and not forced and not just, like, real. Someone who really has a sibling really wrote that somewhere.
Yeah.
The writing and the comedic timing in particular is just so spot on.
Yeah.
That was one of the first things, like, I noticed.
Like, you were saying, Sissy, having women that are, like, multi-layered also is, like, a big hit for me, because, like, she could have just been the evil mean witch.
Yeah.
The cool outfit and the cool long black hair, like, she's hot. It could have just been that, but it's not. So, like, thank God. Let's keep writing and bringing those characters to life, please. So that's why I love that.
Well, I don't know if you remember the Bechdel test. Have you guys ever heard of the Bechdel test?
Yes.
What I love is that it just passes in so many flying colors. And, you know, that's the kind of media I want to consume anymore, because we've seen all the other stuff done 1,000 times.
Yeah, it needs to be standard. Yeah,
we've read that book. We want something new.
And you're still getting that anyway. For anyone who would be mad about the diversity, you're still getting plenty of that anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, like, seeing as, like, I'm watching the show from not a kid's perspective, like, I'm an adult and I'm like, oh, that's, like, a really deep, like, how do children watch this? Because, like,
men are terrified, like, of it. Mom, why are you the bad guy? And I'm like, well,
find life's out. Complicated.
There's some layers to that. I'm not quite a bad guy.
Yeah.
Probably involved trauma.
Do they ever get into a show and then find out that you're in it and be like, oh, it's just Mom again?
Not yet. There was a show that I did a couple years ago called Little Big Awesome that was really sweet. And it was just a show about friendship, and it was really sweet. But they, I don't think they were too young, I think, to really understand that I was the voice of the anthropomorphic nail file. So.
Right on the resume.
Yeah. I know. But,
where do you see yourself in 5 years? I'm anthropomorphic nail file.
Running the inconvenience store. It hasn't really hit home yet, which is fun. Because somebody sent me a bunch of Funko boxes for the Kaguya Otsutsuki character. And so I was signing those today, and they were like, ah, what are you doing? Are you done yet? Why is this all over the table? And I'm like, settle down.
You're gonna think this is cool, trust me.
Yeah. A
couple years, you just wait.
Whatever, it's fine. But yeah, it's fun.
I guess for me with the Owl House, the reason it drew me, I talked a bit about it when we spoke back in August, but at that time I had only watched the first episode, and for me it was just the sense of humor, and that's usually what draws me to a lot of it. Now, sense of humor alone, like Driana said, like, it's fine if it's a bunch of slapstick stuff, but if it doesn't have heart, it's not going to hook me. So the humor drew me in, and then the heart hooked me. And the sense of humor is generally, like, what usually brings me into stuff, unless it's something that it tweaks that, like, really stereotypical 80s action flick thing that I'm always looking to get. Give me any Sylvester Stallone movie, I love it. But at the same time, when it's not that surface level kind of fluff, it has to be something deeper to get me into it. And Owl House has that in spades. I was thinking about the episode where Luce finally doesn't, she gets into the academy, gets into the school, and she finally doesn't have to pick her one coven to join, you know, like, she can choose any one. And that kind of spoke to me before. I don't know how the show shifts to be more to have an LGBTQ character towards the end. I guess that's in the last three episodes that I haven't seen yet, but I thought about it right then and there, because each of the characters who were part of the detention course suddenly chose two different paths, and it was something totally different. In the back of my mind, I was like, I wonder if that's a metaphor for LGBTQ communities, because there's these four kids who are out of the norm and they're kind of choosing two of three different things versus from this whole spectrum of choices. So it was, when I saw that, I kind of started analyzing, that's one of the reasons I stayed on it. And it's not just because it's promoting something that is good, but it's the fact that there's something deeper there, something more than just Rambo running through. If we're going to stick with the Rambo metaphor, it's the difference between Rambo 1 and the newest one. Rambo 1's talking about severe PTSD of Vietnam vets and a guy going through a mental psychological break. And the fourth one's just a guy running through and beating the shit out of people.
Right.
Like both of them, but for different reasons.
Yeah, I think doesn't he only kill like one person in the first movie?
No, he kills a lot.
Oh, okay. I thought there was, I remember hearing that.
Well, maybe not. He maims a lot. He does a lot of maiming in that first movie.
Yeah, because like you said, it's just about the PTSD and like horrors and dangers of war. And then by the end, it's just like chain gun, like throwing machetes.
I always love the from the fourth Rambo, there's a clip of Stallone with a machine gun and he's like, got this really ugly face going on, and they photoshopped the gun out, so it looks like he's just giving thumbs up. He's like, "That's one of my favorite Photoshops."
That started a Photoshop trend where it's like you take an action hero and you Photoshop like thumbs up instead of guns.
You guys seen the one of guitar players with giant slugs?
Yeah,
I've not seen that one.
No,
you've never seen that. Oh, it's so good.
With this like giant slug.
I have to look that up now.
It's so funny.
It's fantastic.
Please add that to your list of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, guitar players just like,
I'm looking at the slug memes right now, and I am not disappointed.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
No, it's interesting too, like watching kids' medium, how much violence there is. You know, watching it from the perspective of like, I'm a mom. I don't really want my kids to be like, oh, I'm mad at somebody, I should go beat them up. Like, I don't want that to be knee-jerk reaction. And that is knee-jerk reaction in so many shows, is fighting. And
it's a very American thing, I feel like. Because in Japan, I think, Andrew, Gerano, we've talked about this, like just, you know, in our casual conversations, where America is much more okay with violence than sex.
Japan
is much more okay with sex and violence.
The other way around, yeah.
It's a very, and to an extreme, there's some pretty fucked up shit that you can find in Japan. But like America on the other end is just so infatuated with violence. And like, I mean, perfect example, they weren't meant for kids when they came out, but they're shown to kids now, Looney Tunes cartoons. I love them. Like, I adore Looney Tunes, but they're very, I mean, generally kids can tell like this is ridiculous and over the top and slapstick, so it's not necessarily, I would assume they're not just going to go out and start putting dynamite in kids' mouths and stuff like that.
Kids aren't just gonna drop anvils on top of our head.
But at the same time, it is a weird thing where violence is significantly more accepted than anything else. It's very interesting.
And that's why I like shows like Shira or Owl House that are more thought-provoking, like, are really good for like the next generation. Like, if there is an evil bad character who does evil bad things and hurt people, it's becoming no longer just they're evil, they're bad, they want to hurt people. It becomes like, here's their backstory. It's like, oh my gosh, that makes so much sense.
Here's their redemption.
Still don't do that. Be redeemed and learn.
It's like Avatar.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's like, exactly, Avatar. Like, look at Prince Zuko. Like, boom. You know. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Steven Universe.
Yeah.
His whole shtick is redeeming villains. He's giving Goku a run for his money for villains that have turned friends in that series.
But I mean, like, again, bringing the 3D characters to life, you know, it's telling a story about figuring out a person's flaws and then finding out how to lift them up. What's not to love?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny because that essentially is normally the formula for any, you know, Oscar nominated movie, you know, any
I'm punchy.
Don't worry about it,
but yeah, no, I mean, redemption is the number one thing, and you know, that's why all the like you know, reformed Nazis always win the Academy Awards. It's like, oh, they were bad, but now they're good. There you go. Here's a
show. Now they're ex-Nazis, which means they're okay.
Judgment Nuremberg.
Yeah.
I have a slightly personal question that's not actually personal at all. I just want to make sure, coming from the source itself and not just Wikipedia, is your birthday February 13th?
Is your birthday February 13th?
My birthday is
February 13th. No way!
Birthday twins.
Yeah. I'm probably much older than you, but that's okay. Yeah, it's kind of made Valentine's Day a little bit of a wash.
All right, so here's the thing. Driana and I's our dating anniversary is January 28th. So then a couple weeks later, within the same week, Driana's birthday, the 11th.
11.
2 days later, mine the 13th. The next day, Valentine's Day. And then nothing the rest of the year. For the rest of the year. I guess our wedding anniversary now is September. But like from February to September is just like, we get it all out of the Christmas. Like we go broke at the beginning of the year because it's like Christmas and anniversary and birthdays. And but we're just kind of like, we'll just do it all at once. Birthentine's Day, birthmas, whatever you want to.
I have to tell you, it's funny. Some of my very best friends have always been either between February 10th and 17th and April 12th and 15th. I've got like weird. Six or seven friends within that. Like,
I'm just out of that April range.
But yeah, it's pretty fun. So happy Aquarian almost birthday.
Happy Aquarian. Yeah, it's coming now up. We definitely have to send her a shirt. Photoshop that logo on there.
Happy birthday.
I'll send you my
I will. That's my day job is a graphic designer, so I can certainly do that. So
really?
Yeah. So actually, technically, because I wear many hats in my job, I am also a professional voice actor.
Really?
Yeah. Just because
I didn't even know that.
Well, I do. I only say that out of a technicality and necessity, I guess. So I do graphic design work. I do video editing. I do voiceover. So like whenever. Basically, it ended up that I would do crazy voices around the office and people would be like, hey, we can actually use that for something. So I've done a lot of local businesses. Like we have one of our bigger clients is like an opera house. And when that was still going on, I would be the guy that would be like, the Fulton Theater proudly presents, like just the smarmy like announcer voice. Or
right.
I almost have enough for like a demo reel that I could put out there, which, you know, people tell me all the time to get into voice acting. So
that's really cool.
I've thought about it. I would love to be in that creative aspect of that world, but I also would love to do a logo for a Marvel movie or something. But
right. That's going to be more constant work.
Yeah.
I will tell you, for anybody who is interested in getting into voiceover, there is a website called iwanttobeavoiceactor.com.
Yeah. Bradley Baker started it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's like one of the workingest men in voiceover, and he put everything into that website. So it's chock-a-block of great information. And Yuri and his wife, Tara, also wrote a book. So
nice.
Read that one too.
I imagine the audio book for that is a little more effective than reading the book. Probably. Due to the nature of the content.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Driana's being modest right now too. She's actually an illustrator and has done a lot of amazing work. She did my emotes for my Twitch, and we're actually in talks of doing shirts for the podcast when I can afford shirts for the podcast. But yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
I saw some of your drawings.
Yeah. Two children's books. So like me and Andrew are kind of a duo. I draw the pictures and he adds the text.
What are they?
Yeah, so I'm still working on getting them on Amazon, but one's called Let's Be Safe, which was, that was a commissioned book, so that wasn't quite mine. But the second one was called Hood, which is a modern retelling of Little Red Riding Hood. So it's done in a digital watercolor style. So like it's still trying to get to grandma's house, but different setting. It is a black little girl instead. So hopefully I want to try to make more books like that.
Tell me when it's out and I will buy a copy for my kids.
Oh.
Freaks out and yeets out of the room. Absolutely.
Oh, that'd be really cool. My kids are mixed race, so we're always looking for alternate characters that aren't just Lily White.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Awesome.
Yeah, well, we still have a couple of...
You can just yeet that and your shirt.
Honestly, yeah. Get us a P.O. box and we'll send you a little care package. PO box,
that'll be great.
Yeah. I don't want to like cut it off, but it is also like 1 a.m. at the same time.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
Not worried about it. Thank you. When things are safe and when things are, and if we are ever on the same side of the country at the same time, we'd love to actually like sit down and talk to you, even if it's just over lunch. It doesn't have to be in a recording studio.
I would love that. I really would. You guys have been so wonderful. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
That's awesome. It really did feel like I was just sitting down having drinks with friends. So thank you guys.
That's what I want it to feel more of a conversation versus then like, all right, here's another press junket you have to do and you have to answer these questions, the same five freaking questions over and over and over again.
So how do you get into voice acting?
I have to tell you guys, I did an interview with a pod that I had done an interview for prior for Firewatch, but he is a huge Owl House fan. And so we get on and we start talking. It was just, every question was about the Owl House and that's fine. But then he was like, he goes, well, I mean, you've kind of peaked now. Like, that's it. And I was like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, I mean, just, you're not going to get any better than this.
He's like, I'm going to go from here. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, why would you say that?
The nerve.
So thank you for not telling me that I peaked.
What?
That's just the audacity of that statement is just fucking wild.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I'm not normally one to get secondhand embarrassed, but I am like secondhand cringing so hard right now, and I didn't even say it.
That was I got off that and I was like, well, I guess I guess Jones is done, so thanks for playing.
Oh my God.
Throw in the towel now. That's it's time to retire. It's all downhill from here.
So that should wrap it up for this episode/video of the Experience Point and of the Still Loading podcast. Sissy, thank you so much for joining us. This is one of the most fun conversations I've had in a while.
Thank you guys so much. It's really been a blast talking with all of you. I love this. I feel like I've just been sitting down with friends and drinking coffee. So thank you.
I can't tell you how much that means to us.
So where can the people find you online? And of course, go play Call of the Sea, everyone. It is out now. So I think it's out on PC, Xbox One, PS4?
It's Xbox.
Yep, okay. Yeah, so PC and Xbox. Yep.
Yeah. Yes, please play Call of the Sea. It's a really beautiful little game, and let me know what you think. I'm on the Twitters at Sissy Speaks. It's Sissy with a C, and Instagram, same. And I'm on Facebook, but Facebook isn't really a thing anymore, is it? So
I wouldn't use it.
Yeah. That's where to find me. Otherwise, I'm just hopping around talking to people and sitting in this room. For much of my days.
What a time to be alive. You can follow us on everything at the Experience Point. It's just like it's spelled here in this fancy logo. It's just at the EXP Point. We cover gaming. Obviously, we're focusing on TV and stuff this time with our wonderful guest. But we have plans to break into tabletop, cosplay, all kinds of stuff. And we're still relatively new, so your follows and likes are very much appreciated. So
hit that subscribe button.
So why don't you smash that like button down below and hit subscribe.
Smash that notification button, bro.
I hate myself that I just did that.
As usual, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. If you want to email me, you can email me stillloadingcontact@gmail.com. You can go to my website, stillloadingpodcast.com. I keep forgetting to plug this. I actually have a merch store that's up now. I don't remember the link, but I'll put it in the show notes. It's on TeePublic. You can Google Still Loading Podcast TeePublic and it's up there.
Shirt for it soon.
Yes, it's just the regular podcast logo, but I'm hoping to do something a little bit more unique and fun with the help of Andrew and Driana here. And the most important plug I have is the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of children receiving inpatient care at hospitals. So if you want to help them out and consider donating, please go to bitbybitfoundation.org. And that will do it. So thank you all once again for listening. Thank you, Sissy, Andrew, and Driana for joining me.
Thank you so much. I've had such a blast tonight.
Me too.
And I will see you all next time.